Hello, this is Mike Swanson. I'm the author of the book, The War State, The Cold War Origins of the Military-Industrial Complex and the Power Elite. In a few moments, another episode of The Great Parallax Views will begin. But before it starts, let me tell you about my book. It's available at Amazon.com, The War State. It's about how the United States became a global superpower after World War II and has brought us to this situation. Grab the book at Amazon.com after the show.
I'm J.G. Michael, and this is Parallax Views.
You have to remember that, you know, folks in this country have been red-baited for so long that they automatically get prepared to be offended when you talk about socialism. So when you start talking about the way that it manifests, the way that you, you know, put it, you know, into practice, then people are like, oh, you know, you start talking about co-ops and credit unions and, you know, things like that. And people are like, oh, and I'm like, yeah.
Hey, Parallax Views listeners, on this edition of the program, we're joined by Green Party Vice Presidential Candidate Angela Walker. Now, you may have noticed on social media recently that 2016 Green Party Presidential Candidate Jill Stein has been taking some flack as a spoiler who took votes away from Hillary Clinton. For some reason, Robbie Mook, Hillary Clinton's campaign manager, apparently doesn't deserve the blame. But I digress. Angela and I will cover that topic, the idea of the Green Party candidate as spoiler, and her response to it, as well as a number of other issues, such as the policies, which her and presidential candidate for the Green Party, Hallie Hawkins, seek to push, including a federal jobs guarantee and an eco-socialist Green New Deal. All that and more on this edition of Parallax Views. And now on to the conversation with Green Party vice presidential candidate Angela Walker. Welcome to Parallax Views. Angela Walker, vice presidential candidate for the Green Party. How are you doing today, Angela?
I am well, thank you. And thank you for having me.
So, Angela, I want to talk a little bit about the platform that you and Hallie Hawkins, who previously appeared on the show, are sort of running with, some of the policy ideas both of you have. But first, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself and your background.
Hi. Well, I'm originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. I currently live in Florence, South Carolina, where I am a dump truck driver. I love it. I am the mother of one and the grandmother of soon to be seven. So, yeah, I didn't think so either, but hey, here we are.
And you've done some political stuff before in terms
yes.
of campaigning, yeah.
I ran for sheriff as an independent socialist in Milwaukee in 2014, and I was the running mate of Mimi Soltysik. In media, Mimi Soltysik of the Socialist Party of the U.S. After that, the sheriff run in Milwaukee got 67,000 votes, which took about 20% of votes.
Was that against the dude that was he's like on Fox News now or something?
Yes.
I thought
former Milwaukee County Sheriff David Clark. Yes, I ran as an independent socialist against him. We took 20% of the vote. That got the attention of the Socialist Party of the USA. And in 2016, I ran with my, you know, homie who recently transitioned. joined the ancestors, Mimi sold to Sick, and was his running mate in 2016.
So in regards to the Green Party, how did you become involved with the Howie Hawkins campaign?
Well, Howie and I had been on panels together. We've been in discussions together. You know, this was somebody that I knew, and I was, you know, already familiar with the Green Party. I, you know, am somebody who has always been very interested in the health of this planet. And, you know, I really appreciated the Green Party's beliefs. And we had talked about a red-green alliance years ago. And so when he asked me to be his running mate this year, it wasn't like this major leap of, oh my goodness. No, I already knew who he was. I knew what he was about, and I know what the Green Party is about. So yeah.
In regards to your own politics, I was reading on Wikipedia that you sort of take a lot from Fred Hampton and Assata Shakur. Maybe you could talk about that. I'm actually a big fan of Assata Shakur. I know she's controversial for like the mainstream of America, but...
Well, for me, she's a hero. She's a hero for me. She's someone that I look up to. She's someone that, you know, I don't think I will ever in this life be as dope as, but, you know, she's amazing. And I'm grateful that Cuba knows that she is a, you know, considers her basically a national treasure. I'm grateful for that, that she's safe. And, you know, just, you know, when I talk about socialism, a lot of times when you speak about it to people, you have to remember that, you know, folks in this country have been red baited for so long that they automatically get prepared to be offended when you talk about socialism. So when you start talking about the way that it manifests, the way that you, you know, put it, you know, into practice, then people are like, oh, you know, you start talking about co-ops and credit unions and, you know, things like that. And people are like, oh, and I'm like, yeah. And so, you know, just thinking of the ways that, you know, the Panthers and, you know, folks who are about Black liberation work, the history of that have always embodied, you know, socialist concepts, you know, mutual aid and making sure that the community is cared for in a very tangible way.
Now, that actually leads me into when you were running for the sheriff's department, maybe you could talk a little bit about why do you think that campaign was, you know, at least on, it was successful on some level. I think you were able to convince some people. I heard in another interview that you said one of the deputies came up to you and said, I voted for you. Why do you think you were able to break through the propaganda so many people experience?
It was a referendum against Clark because he's just that horrible. I mean, honestly.
That's an honest answer.
I mean, seriously. I mean, I want to say, you know, these glowing things about, oh, yeah, people are really. But that wasn't it. You know, it was a very small campaign. It was a very, you know, there was no funding. You know what I'm saying? Nobody was coming. There were no big organizations backing us, you know, so 67,000 people in Milwaukee County who voted for me, I would say that 80% of them were voting against David Clark. Now, the 20% that I'm sure, you know, that showed up for me, yeah, these are, you know, leftists. These are people who knew me through activism. They know, you know, my work as far as, you know, union organizing and, you know, things like that. So, and our platform was very straightforward. It's very similar to what I'm running on now. Same concepts that if you want to deal with crime, you have to address poverty. And we need to talk about the fact that in Wisconsin, generational or institutional racism manifests itself in our communities in very vicious ways. And, you know, people act out that oppression. And this is where we are. And rather than taking these harsh punitive measures, which don't heal anything or truly address anything, we were talking about decriminalizing and legalizing marijuana. We were talking about making sure that workers earn a living wage or are receiving a living wage for their work, that people have a right to safe and healthy housing. Those are the things we were talking about.
So in terms of the platform you're running on now, what are some of the key policy ideas behind the Hawkins-Walker campaign?
Like I said, it's very, very similar. I mean, one of the things that I love about the Green Party is that, you know, we make the connection between the exploitation of human beings under capitalism and connect that to the exploitation of the earth, her non-human life and her resources under capitalism. All capitalism has to go at the end of the day. And so when we're talking about the policies that we are, you know, embracing and that we're promoting with this platform, at the center of it is Medicare for All as a community controlled national health service. You know, we're pushing an economic bill of rights, which would make sure that there is a federal job guarantee for people who are willing and able to work. You will have a job. That job will pay a living wage. That job, you know, you'll have your health covered under healthcare, you know, under Medicare for All as a national health service that is, you know, community controlled.
And can I comment on that real quick?
Yes, please.
I was going to say, you know, the federal jobs guarantee, a lot of people that don't follow left politics, when I introduce that idea to them, they're really open to it. And I think that, you know, we've been propagandized under this sort of neoliberal system for so long that, people who do poorly within this system, it's their own fault, or it's laziness, or they don't want to work. Whereas really, I think everyone deep down generally wants to be part of their community and wants to work and contribute back to the community. So I think the federal jobs guarantee would be a huge accomplishment.
And one of the things that is most exciting to me, my dog is doing something weird. One of the things that's most exciting to me about that federal job guarantee is the fact that, you know, connecting to our peace policies, we're talking about defunding the military by 75%. Bringing that money home and those personnel home and reinvesting in the infrastructure of this country. So when we talk about a federal job guarantee, those are green infrastructure building jobs, which is something I think is absolutely fabulous. So, you know, I mean, the people not just being able to contribute and be part of your community, but be able to do that in a way that builds your community, that is healthy for your community, and that is respecting ecological limits. You know, we're working with nature and working with what this planet needs from us and not against her. So, you know, talking about reparations for African Americans, we're talking about, you know, legalizing and decriminalizing sex work along the New Zealand model. We're talking about, you know, reopening, you know, homesteading opportunities for people who want to be farmers, and want that, you know, somebody like me, you know, want that opportunity, you know, to be open to them. So, I mean, there's like a whole lot of pieces of this platform that I'm really excited about. But I think when we're talking about life and death issues, the first thing is climate change, which is covered under our eco-socialist Green New Deal, addressing that, making sure that people are stable. And so we're talking about an economic bill of rights, healthcare, you know, Medicare for All, and then also talking about peace policies, because the way that the United States moves through the world and this new nuclear escalation, those things are not acceptable. You know, we don't have the right to be in a position to basically destroy life on this planet. It's not acceptable. And so that's one of our big life or death issues, too.
Yeah, I feel as if foreign policy doesn't get talked about nearly enough in a lot of presidential discussions anymore. Foreign policy for me is really important because I grew up during the Iraq War and I saw the damage it really did. Maybe you could elaborate more on the foreign policy aspect of the campaign.
Well, we understand that the United States has moved, you know, maintained a presence in the world as a bully, essentially, and that, you know, creating situations where you can go into other countries and take their resources because you're you and you feel like you can do that, that's not how we want to move in the world. We don't want to, you know, be a part of a world where everybody has guns pointed at one another. And so when we're talking about you know, foreign policy for us. It's ending, you know, these wars abroad. I think we're involved in between, what, 9 and 14 different issues around the world that, you know, people act like aren't happening. We've got installations where people in those countries want us out, have wanted us out forever. And, you know, it all ties into so many different things. You know, when you're talking about maintaining this big military presence in places that don't want you, it's also a huge carbon footprint. And so, you know, all of these things are interrelated. And when you are talking about, you know, de-escalation, as far as, you know, nuclear de-escalation and disarmament, you know, we need to lead by example and, you know, apply diplomacy around the world and change the way that we relate to other countries. You know, there's no need to be the world's bully.
In regards to the eco-socialist Green New Deal, what do we mean by that? Because I think people hear the Green New Deal and they think just the Democratic sort of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez type deal. This is a little bit more expansive, I guess would be the right word than that.
Oh, by all means. First off, I think it's very clear, or that people need to be very clear. The Green New Deal that the Democrats snatched and gutted and diluted, honey, that came from us. That was us first. I've had people attack us saying, you know, you're stealing from the Democrats. You stole your ideas from the Democrats. It's like, wait, honey. No. Look at the Green Party's history. We've been talking about this. And so when we're talking about an eco-socialist Green New Deal, we're talking about it at full strength. We are not negotiating with people about fossil fuels and continuing to use nuclear energy. These things are dangerous. I mean, Fukushima, as far as I understand, I have not heard that Fukushima is no longer leaking. So, I mean, we have a problem here. And so when we talk about the eco-socialist Green New Deal, some of those things are we're pushing for zero carbon emissions and 100% clean energy by 2030, where the Democrats were talking about 2050. We understand we don't have till 2050. This is not a situation where we can kick the can down the road. We've got fires on the West Coast. The Arctic has been 100 degrees. We're in a crisis now, and it has to be addressed now.
Well, I was going to add to that. I mean, even with regards to the issues of race and racial justice, I feel like the Democrats I've talked to, I feel like really fall short when they say things to me like, well, when Biden gets in, you know, the protests will start simmering down. And I just think to myself, I don't think that's true. I think a lot of people are very angry and they're not going to stop protesting until demands are met.
Somebody said that to you?
I have had Democrats say that, yes. And it's embarrassing.
That's hideous. That is absolutely hideous. The Black Lives Matter, you know, the movement for Black Lives was born under President Obama with Biden as VP. That movement came to be under these people. So for them, someone to say something that ill-informed, especially when Biden is not offering any policies of substance that will change the conditions that have created the problems that we're uprising about. He's not going to address systemic racism. He is not going to address ending qualified immunity so that police unions can stop shielding, you know, their personnel who murder people. He's not going to change, you know, drug policy so that folks who are languishing in prison behind marijuana sentences get free. He's not going to free political prisoners who are simply there because the state deemed them enemies. He's not going to do these things. He's not going to address poverty in any substantive way. And so for someone to say, oh, well, it's going to quiet down when he's elected, that's absolute garbage. This movement came to be under an administration that he was the right hand of. Stop it.
You know, in regards to Biden and the Democrats, I want to get your take on and I'm going to have to mention it now because all the people on Twitter are yelling about Jill Stein. They're saying, look, Jill Stein did this. It's her fault that we're getting a conservative Supreme Court justice. Can you weigh in on that? Because I feel like, to me, it's the Democratic Party's responsibility to secure votes. No one owes them votes, but I want you to comment on that.
You just did it. You just said it for me. That is my answer when people come to us. I told the Democrats 4 years ago, I said, I'm going to give you all this for free. If you want people to show up for you, give them a reason to show up in the first place. You are constantly pushing candidates who are absolutely not listening to the will of the people. Why, if you wanted to win, would you get a set of candidates, one of whom is very well known for the crime bill, 1994, that has led to, the ramping up of our problem of mass incarceration in this country, and then have a running mate with the history that his running mate has as a prosecutor? Why would you do that? That's not intelligent. And so you're going to run candidates that people, you have an uprising happening around the country. People are saying defund the police. They are saying it is time to change the system. And you have two people that, the Democrats are pushing as their candidates who have made it very clear they have absolutely no intention of doing any of those things, they're in sympathy. So when people accuse us, which we call the spoiler argument, the Democrats spoil themselves. You keep running, candidates that people have to hold their nose and vomit to vote for, and don't support policies that people are very loudly demanding. And you want to put that on us? That is not on us. That is on you. You should run better candidates.
In that regard, how would you respond to the argument that some Democrats make that, well, this election is different? I mean, look at Trump. He's very authoritarian. How do you respond to that?
I have been Black in this country for 46 years. The conditions that many in my communities, because we're not a monolith, lived under did not start with that individual who is currently occupying the White House. We have been getting the crap kicked out of us for decades. I think the urgency that a lot of people are feeling now is because this pandemic has laid bare a whole lot of ugly things about this country to segments of the population that have never had to deal with them before. And now all of a sudden, there's this urgency. We just have to get him out. And it's like, slow your roll. First off, I'm not supporting that. Second of all, the conditions that, the individual currently occupying the White House is ramping up, those are not new to a whole lot of us. And we did not see, as a matter of fact, it wasn't that, it hasn't been that different, with the previous administration. I mean, I think that individual just happens to be a lot more blatant. I don't like him enough to call him by name. That individual is a lot more blatant with it. But, I think that people just need to be aware that this stuff did not precede him. And you are, the Democrats are running candidates who have said, I'm not going to fundamentally change anything. So why would I support the status quo when there is an option of perhaps, somebody actually giving me what it is I want? Why would I give my, your vote is your voice. It's your leverage. As cliche as that sounds, it's true. They want something from you. Why would I give my leverage to people who don't listen to me, don't acknowledge me? My community does not mean anything to them unless they're demeaning it. Why would I do that?
Well, I was going to say in that regard, it also seems like a way to, the Green Party seems like a way that if you can keep building it, that you could use it to as leverage against Democrats and get them to listen, in the sense that, if enough people start supporting Green candidates, the Democrats would have to listen more. And I'm curious what you think of that idea.
Absolutely. And that's one of the intentions with this campaign, is that, you know, building left unity. We are also running, you know, with the endorsement and support of the Socialist Party of the USA. And we've been endorsed by numerous other socialist groups. So, I mean, when we're talking about building left unity, that is the intention, that all along the left, we are finding ways to coalesce and get our needs met. You know, electoral politics, you know, and you know this as well as I do, is only one tool in that arsenal. And it, you know, I am a personal believer that if you have access to the tools, you use all the tools at your disposal when you're fighting a war. And basically, that's what this is. And so building the Green Party is definitely something that we in the party and we in this campaign are interested in. And we understand that that is, you know, getting into communities and working with the efforts that are already underway, you know, not coming into somebody's, you know, protest or somebody's, you know, action and telling them how to do things, but, you know, finding out who's moving what. How can we be helpful? How can we do knowledge sharing, you know, study groups? How can we, you know, have conversations that strengthen us along, you know, in our communities, and that when we need folks to show up for us, they'll say, hey, I know them. They did this with us. They showed up for us. And you know, we can show up and help them out.
Yeah, it's interesting because I've said to people, there's people that would say, well, why would I vote Green if I don't think they can win the election? And I would say, you know, if someone is running for president in the Green Party, they can give attention at the local level to local Green candidates. And if we keep building that party up, it can become a force to be reckoned with in some way.
We're on the ballot in 30 states, and we will have write-in status in at least, don't quote me on this because I don't have it in front of me, but at least 8 more. So we are actually very viable. And if everybody who sat back and said, well, you can't win, actually showed up, we could, very realistically. And I, you know, we have currently in the states that we're in, and again, I don't have the figure in front of me, but I do know with 30 states, we have enough to get the Electoral College votes. Mm-hmm. And so this is not a campaign that is not viable. We absolutely are. And I think that because so many people have not taken the left in this country seriously, they're not used to, you know, leftists running a very serious campaign. But I think that people absolutely need to know, yeah, we can win, and we are prepared if we do.
Now, that leads me into the last two things I wanted to cover. I know we're short on time, but I was going to say, first, do you feel like the Green Party and your campaign with Howie Hawkins can help those local candidates get a greater profile? I know Howie was very interested in helping local Green candidates sort of rise within the system here.
Oh, yes. We're opening, by us running, we open ballot lines for down ballot candidates. And if you've been watching, you know, being a third party and gaining ballot access is an uphill battle everywhere that we are. But we're making that happen, you know, as much as possible. And so, yes, it opens the door for down ballot candidates to run. And we are encouraging people to run. Take your local offices, you know, the offices that a lot of times, you know, people sleep on in those midterm elections and local elections. They don't think about, you know, maybe your mayor, but they're not thinking about clerk of courts or, you know, things locally that folks can run for. And those are offices that impact people's lives. I would argue, and Harvey does too, we argue that they are more important than a presidential election because this is an everyday interaction that people had. These are offices that people interact with every day and on a much more intimate level. So absolutely, we are running, you know, part of the reason for us running is to make sure that we have ballot lines open in all the states for our down ballot candidates. Absolutely.
So before we close out, the last thing I wanted to ask about was you mentioned that you're running a very serious campaign, and that's the impression I got from Howie as well. You know, I think a lot of people will look at the Green Party or they'll say, oh, isn't that Jill Stein and Crystals? And I'm not attacking Jill Stein, but this is what people will say. How do you respond to that? Because I think that Hallie and the campaign that you're running is very much in a direction that's very serious and isn't, you know, getting bogged down in talk of crystals or anything like that.
And you're the second person that's brought that up. And the thing about it is I do work with crystals. That does not mean that I am less serious about addressing climate change or advocating for racial justice or fighting for racial justice for my people. That absolutely has, that doesn't detract from it. I mean,
well, it's like, would we attack a candidate for being Christian? You know, people don't do that. Why should we attack someone for having different beliefs? Yeah.
No, they don't. And the thing about it is, you know, just because something seems woo to some people, you know, they use it as an excuse to minimize the message. And at the end of the day, you know, what someone believes spiritually or, you know, that is their business, but it should not impact what you are standing on as policy. If you are, you know, I'm thinking of separation of church and state, but like, you know, as far as people's perception, it doesn't make you less of a serious candidate because you don't, you're not like some evangelical Christian. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to be clear about that too.
And I guess what I was getting at, and I'll just say, I actually feel like your and Hallie's campaign exceeds some of the other past Green candidates' campaigns. And that's no shade at Jill Stein or anyone that ran before, but I think you're running a campaign that is really fine-tuned and well-oiled. So I want to thank you for that.
Look at what we're dealing with. I mean, we got a pandemic. We have a rebellion that is not going to go anywhere anytime soon. We have looming economic crisis. You know, folks are unemployed. Rents are coming due. People are not able to make those rents. So we're looking at a lot of evictions. And overarching all of this, we have a climate meltdown happening. We've got, you know, and I live in South Carolina. And so, like, to see, to be in just September, and we're already at S on named storms, they're not coming one behind, they're one behind the other. I've never seen that. And so I would say, you know, we don't have to, just to put it the way that I would put it, you know, on the block, we don't have time to play. We don't. And the what we are talking about as far as policies, this is what we need right now. It is, these are not esoteric concepts that are, you know, woo off in the air. These are things that have a budget. You know, there is a solid plan to them. They are entirely doable. They are implementable now, and they are needed now.
Well, Angela Walker, I want to thank you again for coming on Parallax Views. If you could, let my listeners know how they can support the campaign. And if there's anything you want to say to people that may be naysayers, what's the one thing you would tell them?
Well, first off, I want to thank you again for taking the time to have me on and talk with me. And for naysayers, if you, for folks that, you know, if you're on the Democrat side, stop wasting your time harassing us and go get people to support your candidate. 100 million people chose not to vote in 2016. Y'all got your work cut out for you. You don't have time to be harassing us about who we support. So go find all of those unaffiliated and alienated voters and get them to show up for your candidates. You don't have time to bother us. And, you know, for folks who want to reach out, our campaign website is www.howiehawkins.us. All of our policies are there. And also all of the policy papers related to them. Like, you want a deeper dive and, hey, how do you fund this? Where's the budget for this? Where did you, you know, where are you speaking about whistleblowers or whatever? All of that's on that website. We got a whole lot of stuff on that website. It's one of the most comprehensive I've ever had to deal with. So it's pretty dope. So yes, www.howiehawkins.us. Reach out and ask us questions. Howie and I do a live stream every Tuesday, going across at 8 Eastern, going out across Twitch, Facebook, and YouTube. Yes, we do read the chat. So, you know, ask us questions, leave a question at the website if you need to. And my Twitter, my IG, my Facebook, all of them are Angela N. Walker. N as in Nicole. So, you know, slide into my DMs if you need to and ask me a question if you have one. And if you, you know, are a naysayer, rethink it before you ask me.
Well, thank you again, Angela, for coming on Parallax Views.
Thank you for having me.
Well, that does it for this edition of Parallax Views. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Angela Walker, vice presidential candidate for the Green Party. As always, let me know what you thought about this edition of Parallax Views by dropping me a line on Twitter at ViewsParallax or by email at ParallaxViewsPod@protonmail.com. Producers credit shoutouts to Amelia, Mark, Martin, Brace, John, Ted, Zach, Gratz, and Mickey. If you'd like your very own producers credit on each and every edition of Parallax Views, well, consider joining those listeners in supporting me at the $10 or $15 tiers on my Patreon page at patreon.com/parallaxviews. That's patreon.com/parallaxviews. First of the month, I'm hoping to continue building my Patreon support. If you can, please consider supporting me on patreon.com/parallaxviews. It is you, the faithful listener, that makes this show possible. And with that being said, until next time, you've been listening to Parallax Views with Parallax Views. To Parallax Views with Parallax Views.
The way out is not simply to say, don't do it, just to prohibit. It's nothing else. If we don't do it, others will be doing it like crazy. So, you know, we have to confront the problem. But no, basically, I know of the great anxiety problems, new forms of control, but it's also new forms of freedom. This is why I always emphasize that internet and all this new digital stuff, it's a very ambiguous phenomenon, but it's the field of struggle. New forms of enslavement, but at the same time, new incredible forms of freedom. We have to accept the fight with no nostalgia for old, allegedly more authentic communities or whatever. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid. I'm not afraid.